most Novembers. I break down and cry. Cause I can't remember if we said goodbye. That's Steve Earle and Emmylou Harris there in the background with Goodbye. And before that, we heard from Brandi Carlile with The Story. This has been Highway 322 with Carrie. Thanks for joining me this evening. Up next, we have Dixieland Marmalade with Jerry. After that, lots of other music. Check us out on kgnu.org. Thanks for listening.
Good evening and welcome to another Dixieland Marmalade show. We have a very special show for you this evening. I'm Jerry Maddock, and this show is based on a grant that the National Parks Foundation gave to a pianist, vocalist, and composer, Tom Hoke. He's from New Orleans, and he prepared and delivered a combination of lecture and concert on the origins and development of the New Orleans piano style at the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which hosts world-class jazz and musical concerts, and the old U.S. Mint venue. So, without further ado, here's Tom Hoke. Sorry, let's try again.
Well, thank you very much, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the U.S. Mint, the Jazz National Park here. The song I just played for you might have seemed like an unusual selection to begin a discussion about the evolution of New Orleans jazz piano. It was written in 1902 by a man named Joseph Wagner. He was an Austrian, and the name of the song is Unter dem Doppeladler. Now, in this country, we call that Under the Double Eagle, and it's a song that made its way into American culture in folk music and popular music as well. Why began a discussion about jazz with a European march? Well, that's basically because it was one of the integral building blocks of the music that became jazz. New Orleans was unique in a place where jazz evolved because it was settled by a number of different European countries over the course of a short span of time. In its history, it was a Spanish city, it was a French city, it was an English city. Because it's a big seaport, you had a huge influx of people from all across Europe, a large population of Italians and Irish and Germans all living here together. In each one of those societies came to this city, they brought their own music with them. Now, New Orleans has always been a place that celebrates life. It's just maybe because it's a French city or a Spanish city, I don't know, but we still do that. In New Orleans, we celebrate everything. It doesn't matter. Every weekend, there's a festival. Anything happens, we have a parade and a big giant party. We're fond of saying that New Orleans is the city that put fun in funeral. It's true. We have a lot of fun here, and they always have. So you had all of these different cultures having all of these events and these parties and these balls, and this music began to get mixed together. So there wasn't really a dividing line between different nationalities and their music. Now, there's another element that got introduced into that European march and dance music that came from Africa. Of course, New Orleans was one of the largest slave trading centers in the country. Also, because it was a French city, there was a tradition in French society that a person who was enslaved could buy their way out of bondage, and did. So New Orleans had a large community of what they called free people of color. So you had lots of African influences into the music as well. Now, there's a device in African music called syncopation. Syncopation is where the accent of the music falls in an irregular place. In European music, it's pretty straight ahead. If it's a waltz, it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. If it's a polka, it's 1, 2, bump, bump, bump. All pretty straight ahead. With syncopation, that beat falls someplace where you don't expect it. Instead of sounding like, it sounds like, that syncopation got mixed into this European music, and people started calling that ragged time music because of the uneven ragged meter, and of course ragged time became ragtime. Ragtime music evolved in this country in the late 1890s here in New Orleans and all up the Mississippi Corridor. I'm going to play a song for you right now that has the distinction of being the first ragtime tune. It was written by a man named W.H. Krell in 1897. Krell was a band leader from Chicago. And this is considered to be the first rag only because it was the first piece of music to be copyrighted with the word rag in the title. But it's a good example of a European-sounding march with many sections and lots of syncopation. This is W.H. Krell's Mississippi Rag, 1897. Now, of course, Krell was from Chicago. He wrote that song. And you've got to realize that the Mississippi River was the internet of the 19th century. Information, goods, and people traveled up and down the Mississippi River system so that all this stuff was connected. What was happening musically in New Orleans was soon happening in St. Louis and in Chicago and in Kansas City and up the Ohio River to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and up the Tennessee River to Nashville and so on and so forth. So you had this exchange of ideas going on. Now, up in the Midwest, about the same time that Krell wrote the Mississippi Rag, there was a man playing in a little club in Sedalia, Missouri. Sedalia is in, right in the center of the state between Kansas City and St. Louis on the railroad. And he was playing in a place called the Maple Leaf Saloon. His name is Scott Joplin. Scott Joplin, piano player from the Midwest, also playing this ragtime music. And he composed a tune at the Maple Leaf Saloon that became a sensation. It was published in Kansas City soon after, and then St. Louis, New York, and this new thing called ragtime became a national phenomenon. In fact, the Maple Leaf Rag has a distinction of being the first piece of sheet music to sell over 1 million copies, and it's probably the most recognizable of the rags, and I'm going to play a little bit for you. This is some classic Scott Joplin rag. This is Midwestern-style ragtime. Maple Leaf Rag. You recognize that, of course. Now, down here in New Orleans, all this ragtime music was going on, and you had European music. Now, there's a couple of other elements that got mixed up in the melting pot that turned into the music that we call jazz. One of those elements is the blues. The blues is another device that comes to us from Africa. It's descended from call-and-response singing. It's prevalent in African society and, of course, came with the slaves to this country. In call-and-response, you have a leader who sings out a line, and everybody in the group answers back. And he sings out a line, and they answer back, and then he sums it all up. And that's kind of why blues music is like that. You know, the lines always repeat. Nobody knows the way I feel this morning. Then everybody answers, nobody knows the way I feel this morning. And that goes back and forth and it sums up. So we all are familiar with blues lyrics. Blues is more than just a set of lyrics. It's also a musical scale. Now, you may remember from your piano class or being in school that there's basically, in our culture, two scales that we use, a major scale and what we call the harmonic minor scale. A blues scale is neither major or minor. It's a fusion of both scales. So what you have is major chords with minor notes in them, where you get that nobody knows, that kind of thing. That's a blue note, and it's that juxtaposition of major and minor that made this music so interesting. Blues composes about 90% of the popular music that's been published in this country since the 1950s, at least, and is a huge part of our music. That was prevalent here in the South, in New Orleans especially. There's one other device that I want to talk about. It's Latin music. Because New Orleans was a Spanish city and the largest city in the northern part of the Banana Republic here, we always had a lot of trade with the Caribbean and with South America. So there was a huge Latin influence in this city. One of the great innovators in jazz said that if it wasn't for Latin culture, you wouldn't have jazz, which is an interesting thought. I'm going to play an example of that. Now, this song was written in 1903 by a man named Ferdinand Joseph Lament. It's called the New Orleans Blues. So if you'd been in New Orleans in 1903, this was a hit. You would have heard this played. And it is what we call a habanera. It's a Latin rhythm. It's basically an ancestor of the rumba. And this is what it sounds like, a little New Orleans blues. So you hear what I'm talking about. It's a blues, it's got a Latin feel, it's got syncopation in it, it's all starting to make sense now. Now what is jazz? The word jazz itself comes to us from where a lot of this music was played. Back in the 1912, 1915, in that area, the city fathers of New Orleans created a place called Storyville. Storyville was right over here, right on the other side of Rampart Street. It was the red light district for New Orleans. That was where all the sporting houses were located. And for those of you that don't get out much, a sporting house is a place where you buy sporting goods. It's okay. So these places had piano players playing in them so the girls could go out and parade their wares. And this Lament, Ferdinand Joseph Lament that I was telling about, played in these sporting houses in Storyville. The word jazz itself comes from a word called jass. Jass, in its original form, in that time period, you could not use in polite society. Jass meant basically what the federal government's been doing to us for the last 200 years. Jass, okay? You get my drift. It's a sporting house. That's what jass meant. You could not publish that word, so when they played this jazz music, or they published this jazz music, they changed the word to jazz. They changed the S's to Z's. You could publish the word jazz. And that's really what jazz is. It's taking an existing melody and having relations with it and changing it around. You're jazzing the rag is the expression that it came from. You're making something brand new. And so it was basically a European melody with new elements, African elements, blues elements, Latin syncopations, and then improvisation. That was one of the things that the musicians were doing. They were taking a melody, and then they'd create a whole new melody spontaneously over the existing chord changes, improvising jazz solos. And that's the beauty of jazz, and why it's the only American original art form is because it's something unique, something very American. It's never the same twice. And that's the beautiful thing about jazz, and that's kind of how it all evolved. Now, this man, Ferdinand Joseph Lament, I keep talking about, was born just a couple of blocks from here in this area that we call the Faubourg Marigny. He played in these sporting houses. A very flamboyant character. A lot of legends exist about him, always known to wear expensive clothing, a big, heavy gold watch chain. He had diamonds embedded in his front teeth. At one time, he was said to own both a Lincoln and a Packard, and he would chain one to the other and pull it around the French Quarter so folks saw that he had two cars. He was that kind of a guy. You probably know him by his stage name, Jelly Roll Morton. Yeah, Jelly Roll Morton. Jelly was a great band leader, a great piano player, a composer, an innovator, pioneer of jazz. And I'm going to play some Jelly Roll for you now. This is an example of how he kind of evolved. There's a song that I learned when I was a teenager, when I first started listening to this music, and I was enamored with it. It's called Grandpa's Spells. I didn't really understand it until I got to be a grandfather a few years ago, and now it makes more sense, because in the middle of the song, you hear something that sounds like this. That's Grandpa having a spell. It's written into the music. There's a little X and a stem. It says forearm smash. So those of you that are grandfathers, and particularly women married to grandfathers, know exactly what I'm talking about. Here's Jelly Roll's Grandpa's Spells, written in 1909. Thank you. Thank you. Jelly Roll Morton. Like I said, Jelly played in those sporting houses. I'm going to play a little New Orleans blues for you right now. This is an example of what the blues sounded like down here. Of course, like I told you, the blues came from Africa. It grew up in the Mississippi Delta in the form of work songs and field hollers. Here in the city, it took on a little character of its own. This song's called the Whinin' Boy Blues. In 1937, musicologist Alan Lomax interviewed Jelly Roll Morton for the Library of Congress. And Jelly sang lots of songs and told lots of stories, and he sang the verses to the Whinin' Boy Blues, and there's about 100. Not really, but there's dozens. And of those verses, there are 3 that I can do here today in public, okay? It's that kind of a song. So if you're interested in hearing the Whinin' Boy Blues, you're going to have to Google it and find it online. But I'm going to do a little Whinin' Boy. This is the cleanest I can get with it. This is an example of, if you've been going to a sporting house in New Orleans in 1920, this is something you would have heard. I'm the Whinin' Boy, can't deny my name. Whining boy, can't deny my name. I'm the whining boy, can't deny my name. Dig it out and shake it like a stavin' chain. I'm the whining boy, can't deny my name. Watch the spider crawl, crawling up and down the wall. Watch the spider crawl, crawling up and down the wall. Watch the spider crawling up and down the wall. He's going out, he's gonna get his ashes hauled. Watch the spider crawl, crawling up and down the wall. Come and get a look at sis. Hey, mama, 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 come and get a look at sis. Mama, mama, get a look at sis. She's laying out there on the levee, she's doing the turtle twist. Mama, 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 come and get a look at sis. Like a statement chain, 'cause I'm the whining boy, I can't deny my name. No sir, no sir, no sir. Whining boy. Jelly Roll was quite a character. In 1928, Duke Ellington took over the band at the Cotton Club in Harlem, and he became very, very popular. Now, Jelly Roll had been toiling away down here in New Orleans for many, many years and traveling around the country in vaudeville shows, minstrel shows, and as a musician, and he kind of took offense to that, so he thought if there could be a Duke Ellington, there certainly could be a Jelly Lord. And in this song, he claims that he's performing for the King and Queen of England. As far as anyone can tell, he never left North America, but that's just the way Jelly Roll was. And so this is his self-promotion piece. It's called Mr. Jelly Lord. Foreign lands far across the sea, they knight a man for bravery. Make him a duke or a count, you see, must be a member of the royalty. Mr. Jelly Roll would sing in the temple by the king and queen. All at once he struck upon a harmony chord, and the king said, make Mr. Jelly a lord. Hey, Mr. Jelly Lord, he's sitting at his old keyboard. See him toil, plays jazz music as a rule. He sits upon his throne, that old piano stool, makes his melodies. I mean, he strokes the ivories with a lovely little chord. And now at home as well as abroad, they call him Mr. Jelly Lord. They do. They call him Mr. Jelly Lord. When Mr. Jelly struck his old hometown, all the people, they gathered round. They said, Mr. Jelly, you're so grand, we're going to make you king of Dixieland. All the people from far and near said, Mr. Jelly, you have nothing to fear. The preacher man said, laws, the laws ain't fair. We can't make him the king, we're going to make him the mayor. He's sitting at his old keyboard. You should see him toil, see him strolling down the street. Yes, the man's an angel with the great big feet, with his melodies and his eyes. ivories and a simple little chord. Now out on as well as abroad, they called him Mr. Jelly Lord. Hey, Mr. Jelly Lord, he's sitting at the old keyboard. Watch him toil, plays jazz music as a rule. God knows he loves that little ivory fool with the melodies and his love of the ivories and just one simple little chord. Now Adam, as well as a broad, they called him Mr. Jelly Lord. They do called him Mr. Jelly Lord. They called him Mr. Jelly Lord. Ain't kidding. Call him Mr. Jelly Lord.
You're listening to KGNU 88.5 FM, 1390 AM in Boulder and Denver, 98.7 FM in Fort Collins, and 93.7 FM in Nederland. Online, of course, at kgnu.org. This show can be heard after tomorrow on afterfm.com. We're listening to Tom Hook with his erudite explanation of the development of New Orleans jazz piano, and the show is Dixieland Marmalade. And this program is supported by KGNU listener members and by the Treeport Music Fest in downtown Boise, Idaho. 5-day discovery passes are available until the first artist announcement. More treeportmusic.com/discovery information or by calling TMF888-2017. Let's get back to Tom Hook.
As I said, Jelly Roll played all over the United States. He left. What happened was, in the end of the First World War, the Department of the Navy closed down Storyville. As you know, during the First World War, New Orleans was a big port, and there were lots of boys sailing out of here on the way to France. Before they'd get on the troop ship, they'd go to Storyville. They'd come back on the troop ship with something they didn't have when they left the troop ship. So the Secretary of the Navy closed down Storyville, and all of those musicians and all those working girls found other places to go. The musicians, most of them left New Orleans, went upriver to Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, and then on to New York and all across the country. And that's exactly what Jelly Roll did. He went to Chicago, then he began to travel. He played all over the United States. He was in Michigan. He was in Washington. He was in Los Angeles. He was all over the country. And at one point in his career, in 1919, he was down in Tijuana, Mexico, playing at a place called the Kansas City Bar. And while he was there, he fell in love with a cocktail waitress. And as was the case then, and as the case is now, as a jazz piano player, he didn't have any money. So she wanted a present. So he wrote her a song. He called it The Pearls, and he gave it to her. Now, The Pearls is a great piece of music because it is about 20 years ahead of its time as far as the complexity of the harmonies and the things he's doing with the rhythms. Up until that point in time, jazz music, it was all pretty much straight eighth notes. One E and a two E and a da 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 da. 16th notes and eighth notes. Now, what the musicians in New Orleans, Jelly Roll, and then another talented young trumpet player you may have heard of called Louis Armstrong, were experimenting with that rhythm. Because New Orleans had a huge Italian population, there were a lot of Italian musicians also playing jazz music. And one of the main rhythms in Italian folk music is the tarantella. Da, 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 da. Right. Well, New Orleans, because it's a small city, you have people living next door to each other of all different nationalities and all different colors, and everybody just blends and mingles together. The Italian musicians were playing with African or black musicians and the other European musicians, and all this got mixed up. So that tarantella rhythm started to make its way into jazz. And what they were doing, instead of playing one and two and da 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 da, they started leaving out the middle eighth note, so it became, instead of ya da 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 da, became da 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 da. And that's called swinging the eighth note. So what you had was melodies like, instead of became swing. Swing eighth notes began the big band swing era. And Jelly Roll and Louis Armstrong and those New Orleans guys were experimenting with swing rhythms in the late 1900s, early 1920s. So in this song, The Pearls, we hear evidence of him starting to swing the eighth. And this was about 10 or 15 years before anybody else was doing it, even Louis. So here's The Pearls, Jelly Roll Morton. Thank you. hear it? You heard Start to Swing? 1919 was when he was doing that. I'm going to do one more Jelly Roll Morton tune and then move on to a couple of other things before I let you go. By the way, I want you to know that there's going to be a test at the end of this program, and the doors will be locked, and you have to get a passing score before you can get out. So I hope you've been taking notes and paying attention. I'm kidding, of course. Jelly, like I said, traveled around the country for many, many years. Ended up in Washington, D.C. in the 30s. He was involved in a knife fight up there, and he got stabbed. And because it was the late 1930s, they took him to the hospital. They wouldn't take care of him because it was a white hospital, so they had to pack it with ice and haul him across town to a black hospital. Finally, he got treated, but he never really recovered from his injuries. He went to Los Angeles to recover and recuperate, and he was out there at the end of his life. He died in 1941 from complications from that knife fight. But he wrote, this last song he composed, he was still trying to make it big, and his star had kind of set by then. Music had moved on by the 30s. You had the beginning of the big band era. You had songwriters like the Gershwins and Cole Porter writing music. Jelly Roll's music was a little old-fashioned, but he still wanted to be a songwriter and a famous one, so he penned this last little tune that was inspired by the invention of artificial sweetener, and it's a lovely little song. It's his last tune. It's called Sweet Substitute. She knew I'd miss her every night and day. I just had to take a look around. Boys, you see just what I found. I found my sweet substitute. Sweet substitute. She tells me she's mine, all mine. Does anything I tell her, love is blind. She's got such loving ways, puts my head in a daze. My new recruit, she mighty cute, and I'm crazy about my substitute. I don't want another, crazy about my substitute. Such loving ways, put my head in a daze. My new recruit is mighty cute, and I'm crazy about my substitute. Don't want another, I'm crazy about my substitute. Sweet substitute. There's one more musical piano innovation I want to talk about this afternoon before I let you all go. And it evolved in the early part of the last century. All across the deep mid-south, there's a vast pine forest that extends all the way from the coast all the way to the Mississippi River. And back in the early part of the 20th century, there were lumber companies that were chewing their way through those forests, producing lumber and turpentine. And they set up what they called turpentine camps, where they actually would build railroads, lay track, cut down trees, send them back, and just keep chewing their way through the forest. So what you ended up with before long was a group of able-bodied young axemen out in the middle of the piney woods with nothing to do at the end of the day. And so it wasn't long before these lumber companies figured out, what we'll do is we'll take an empty box car, we'll put a piano in there, and we'll get a big fat piano player to go in there and play. We'll get a barrel of cheap whiskey, and at the end of the payday on Friday, these guys will give us all the money that we gave them on Saturday. And that's exactly what happened. And there's a style of music that evolved in these turpentine camps that legend says came from the fact that they were around trains all the time. And it developed kind of a rumbling, repetitive ostinato, is the word for it, left hand like. Hear the train? That's called Boogie Woogie, and that's named after the left hand. Boogie Woogie piano grew up in the turpentine camps of the Deep South, and that music made its way to New Orleans as well. And a lot of musicologists believe that it's the influence of that Boogie Woogie music that led to New Orleans being one of the premier centers for the birth of rock and roll. A lot of people feel that it's Memphis. At the same time Memphis was growing rock and roll, so was New Orleans in the mid-1950s, and it was the influx of that Boogie Woogie rhythm. So I'm going to finish up the program with a Boogie Woogie tune that I composed, because I live in New Orleans, and it's the New Orleans Music Show, and it's based about my hometown. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri, originally, and this is a boogie-woogie piece that I wrote, and see if you can hear the train in the left hand. It's called the Kansas City Boogie. Kansas City, Milton had a swinging bar, and there he'd sit, riding south of the way, smoking on a big cigar. It was the home of 100 entertainers, jukeas joined around. Like no request, man, the music's free, we only play the coolest sounds. And I could hear Big Joe Turner moaning, and Coleman Hawkins on the saxophone. I love the Kansas City sound. I got my hair slicked back and I'm going downtown. Roll it, Pete, roll that boogie woogie. Baby, love it, keeping the beat. I was a wild little boy, I was born up in Kansas City, living out on the street. Some burned ends down at Arthur Bryant's and a jug of Kansas City wine, with Wilbur Harrison standing on the corner over at 12th and Vine. I could catch Jay McShann play the boogie woogie. I caught Mary Lou down at the Cherry Blossom, where Lester cut Webster with old Herschel Evans too. And I could hear Big Joe Turner moaning, Coleman Hawkins on the saxophone. I love the Kansas City sound. I got my hair slicked back, I'm going downtown. Roll it, Pete, roll the boogie woogie. Baby, love it, keeping the beat. I was a wild little boy born out in Kansas City, living out on the street. It's been my pleasure to be with you this afternoon. We hope you have a great stay in the Crescent City. I'm Tom Hook. Thanks a lot.
hope you enjoyed Tom Hook's concert on the development of New Orleans piano styles. In fact, he has a part two to that, and that will be coming up soon on KJNU. You'll just have to stay tuned because it hasn't been programmed yet. But right now, I want you to stay tuned for Swing Shift.
Well, thank you very much, and a hearty good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Gloss with tonight's Swing Shift here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and tonight we're going to continue the sounds of our girlfriends. If you're still looking for that Valentine sweetheart, it's still February, it's not too late, so stay tuned for some wonderful suggestions. Well, if you're still looking for that special someone, you aren't alone. Certainly, Tony Pastor, together with the Clooney sisters, are looking. The year is 1947.
You hold your bottle up. What are you? Now what? You are the what? Do what?
Gonna get a girl.
You hold your bottle up.
Cause I ought to have a girl.
What are you?
Cause I never had a girl. That's why I'm gonna get a girl.
Now what? Do what? Do what? Do what?
Gonna get a miss. For kissing. Gonna get the kiss.
What are you?
I'm missing. Brain is in a whirl. That's why I'm gonna get a girl.
Now what? Do what? Do what? Do what?
He's been getting wise, watching other guys walking their cutie. He's making up his mind, gotta go and find one of those beauties.
Can't stop me, gonna get a girl.
You hold your bottle up.
Cause I ought to have a girl.
What are you?
Cause I never had a girl. That's why I'm gonna get a girl.
Thank you.
Because I ought to have a girl.
What are you?
Because I never had a girl. That's why I'm gonna get a girl.
Now what? Do what? Do what? Do what?
Gonna get a miss.
You won't depart,
kissing. Gonna get the kiss.
What are you?
I'm missing.